Rain of Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch, claw, up against the wall.
Can't explain that what I'm feeling right now, guys.
Let's open up that rave line. Woohoo!
Oh, I can't believe USC is going to do the same thing again, year after year. Oh, no.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Random Troy Radio, episode 385, coming to you on Tuesday, October 27th. We are just 11 days away from USC football. The Trojans and the Arizona State Sun Devils locking horns at the Coliseum. We're going to talk about the latest from fall camp, some news about the program, and so much more, including a ton of listener questions here on this episode. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Rain of Troy, like us on Facebook, facebook.com/Rain of Troy. Be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Overcast, Google Play, and Omni. Our bonus episodes are on Patreon, patreon.com/Rain of Troy. Our email address is rainoftroy@fansite.com, and our phone number is 213-373-1USC.
Suck it, what's Bruin Show.
I'm your host, Michael Castillo, joined along with my co-host, Alicia Daratola.
Hello, everybody.
Hello, Alicia. You know, 11 days from now, we'll have college football. USC and ASU at the Coliseum. A 9 a.m. kickoff. Nothing will get you more excited than a 9 a.m. kickoff. I feel like I have to be honest with the listeners here. It's 11 days, and I don't know if I'm ready yet. Which makes no sense, because this has been the longest offseason of our lives. We talked about it last offseason. We said that was the longest offseason of our lives. Little did we know that this one was going to be even longer. And it hasn't hit me that football season is just around the corner. Am I weird? Is it me?
No, it's been weird. It's definitely been weird. It's been weird for me too, because I've been covering college football that isn't USC, and so I, you know, going into the season for the SEC and the Big 12 and all of those, I felt very strange, and then I kind of dove back into it because of the nature of my job. So I kind of feel like I've gotten used to the idea that college football is being played because I'm watching so much of it. But at the same time, I'm exactly where you are as far as USC coming back. It's like, I am super excited about USC coming back, but I'm also like, I'm super ready for the season to come back in terms of just, I want it here now. But I also, part of me weirdly doesn't still think it's real. Like, it was crazy to me to wake up this morning and think to myself, like, a week from today, I'm going to be doing preview stuff for USC's football game. Like,
yeah,
it just, everything has felt out of whack. And
we're
so
it's a few
been
days away from game week.
Yeah, it's very hard to process just because we didn't get the normal lead up. And so I think it's perfectly natural for everyone to sort of sit back and go, like, what is going on? What has been happening? How do we deal with knowing that, you know, USC football season is about to start, even though it's totally abnormal the way it's all going down and the way that we are getting set and ready for it. It's just all extremely strange.
Yeah. And, you know, this isn't just me and USC football. This is just me and sports in general.
Yeah. Like, and you're not alone.
So much of it just feels so weird right now. I mean, The World Series doesn't feel normal. The nothing feels
which,
normal.
Which, by the way, the World Series has been great. As a neutral, it's been really great to watch.
I mean, Game 4 was great.
I mean, you are not a neutral here, Michael. Even though
as a lifelong
Rays
fan,
like, yes.
That Game 4 was just fantastic.
Greatest moment of your Rays fandom?
I think
bar
so.
None?
Yeah.
No, you're not alone. I have been fortunate that that because of you know, sort of been working on the news desk more or less, I have been exposed to way more sports than I normally am, because normally I'm so focused in on USC that I'm not actually watching that much sport outside of that. And so I have been just inundated and consumed by NFL games and baseball games and basketball games and hockey games up until a little while ago. So for me, it's been weird because I've been so in it, because I've had to be so in it. But you and I know a lot of other people have had a really hard time getting back into it, getting back to their normal routine of sitting down and watching a game of any sort. I don't think you are alone by any stretch of the imagination. And I was having this conversation with some people that, you know, the diehards, I think, it's easier for them to get back into it because they never really leave it during the year. But the casuals, if you're a casual USC fan.
Casual?
Not USC, but like, you know, you're a casual baseball fan at this point, right? Like you're a casual NFL fan. Like you don't have an NFL team that you have to sit down and watch every week.
I've been a Jags fan since 95. What's on my desk right now? A Jags helmet.
Yeah, but you are not a hardcore Jags fan, Michael.
I mean, I don't
be
know what
real.
Our record is. We're just taking for Trevor Lawrence.
I have watched more Jaguars football this year than you have. I guarantee you that. So that's all I'm saying is that I think it's harder to get back in if you're a casual. And so I'm hoping that, you know, most of the people listening to this podcast, you would think, are less of the casual persuasion and more of the, maybe not full-on hardcore, but more of the hardcore. And hopefully, once it all becomes real, everything will click back as though it were normal. But I think it will take something to sort of launch everybody back into it. And I think that something is the game itself.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm hoping for. I mean, I'm hoping that, come November 7th, that morning, despite all of my disgruntled, takes about the morning kickoff, that come 9:05, everything feels normal again, being back in a press box and watching a game and tweeting, talking to you guys on Twitter and in our Slack channel, and everything will feel normal then. I'm hoping. I mean, it's just been such an interesting off season that I feel just like sports are just so distant at this point. And I say this as someone who is suddenly all into F1. So it's not like I'm not getting my sports fix, but I don't know. It's been a wild off season.
Not to extend this conversation out too far, because I know the people don't like when we discuss other sports. But I do think there's something to be said for the sports that are least visually impacted by the pandemic, the structures that are in place. I think those are easier to watch. Having gotten into F1 just this year, I've never seen an F1 season that isn't without a crowd. And F1, the nature of it, the races, it doesn't really matter if the fans are there. It's not like they have an impact on the game. Where when you're watching a football game or a soccer game, you notice when the stands are empty. You notice when the crowd is not the level of loudness that you think it should be. And I think that's also something that maybe takes you out of it just a little bit. But that'll be something that USC fans have to contend with, knowing that the Coliseum will be empty more or less on the 7th and going forward.
Hey, you can have your cutout there for $55.
You can have your cutout there for almost as much as it would cost you to buy a ticket to the game.
I have strong opinions about the whole cutout thing. I think it's great that it's come from the Bundesliga and it's translated to American sports. We've seen all the different, teams that have done it, and it looks kind of cool, and it's a good way to get your fans involved despite them not being there and all that kind of stuff. At the same point, $55 per game for a cutout?
$300 plus dollars for the cutout for the season, and you'd have to pay an additional $25 to get it shipped to you.
Can't do that. Like, I wouldn't do that. And mind you, I don't know what the price should be, because I know the logistics of that stuff is difficult. I mean, I used to work at a company that did printing. Full color printing of that size is expensive. It's not like there's a huge upsell there. Like, that stuff just is expensive. And if you want it to be on good poster board and you want it to actually stand and be legitimate, it's going to cost money. It just, the idea of paying $55 to not be at a game is wild to me.
I am a cheapskate, so that would be my first thing, is that that's a lot of money to be spending to not go to a game. And I have never had enough money to just sort of throw it around like that. So more power to the people who can afford that in their lives. I certainly have never been in that position. So I don't know. But like at the same time, it's, you know, USC is losing a lot of money on this season. So if they're going to try and recoup it somewhere, I can't necessarily blame them for that. I really can't. Right. It's just, I don't think we are the target audience for it, honestly.
No, but the people listening to this show definitely are.
Right, and each one of them, like, I think they have to make that decision if that's something that they want to do. And like I said, if it's something that you have the power to do, more power to you. I wish I was in your position.
Hypothetically, though, if you did put in a picture of yourself, what would be the hardest part.
That would be the hardest part. I'd have to pick a damn picture of myself. So I'd either have to have, like, do a photo shoot where I have somebody take a picture of me where I'm wearing whatever gear that I want to wear and doing whatever pose that I want to do and do it that way. Like, that seems like the obvious thing that you'd have to do, right? Because if you want it to be like a full standing person, is that how you would consider it? Like,
I think so. I think you got to be making like a cheering motion.
Yeah.
I have a cheering pose?
Yeah. But then I've seen at some NFL stadiums, they're just sort of doing, it's just sort of like the torso up. So maybe you just take a picture of you at a game at some point. Like, I have some pictures of me at games from when I was a student that, like, maybe those would be the ones that I'd choose.
When you were at Notre Dame.
When I was not at Notre Dame. But, like, picking a picture would be so crippling for me that's probably, aside from being cheap, that's probably the other big reason why I just wouldn't do it, because that sounds like a pain to me to have to make that choice of, this is the picture I'm going to get blown up into a life-size me.
Speaking of things that are cheap, let's talk about our bonus episodes over at Patreon, patreon.com/reignoftroy. If you love the podcast, there's so much more coming your way over on Patreon, including this month. We're doing our 10-part position-by-position preview. We've done the offense. The defense is still to come here in this last week of October. Talking about USC, every single position group. We're talking about the linemen. We're talking about the linebackers. We're talking about the defensive backs, the quarterbacks, the wide receivers, the tight ends, and so on. Every single position group until the beginning of the season. It is a fun time over at Patreon, patreon.com/reignoftroy. You get all of our bonus content for as little as $5.55 per month, but you also get ad-free main episodes. And the great thing about Patreon is you get a custom RSS feed that you can take to your current podcast catcher, Apple Podcasts, Overcast, whatever you're using. You take that personalized RSS feed, you import it in there, and you get all of our bonus episodes right in your podcatcher, so you can listen in the car, you can listen on your run, while you're at the gym, while you're, let's be real, it's COVID time, while you're at home, while you're doing the dishes, while you're doing whatever you're doing, when you're listening to the podcast. All of our bonus content for as little as $5.55 per month. For $10, you get to join our Slack channel and talk to us in addition to everything else. Talk about USC football. And on game days, that's always a pretty happening spot to be in.
Yeah, that's one of the things I'm most looking forward to the season starting, is having the Slack open on Saturdays and getting to interact with the folks. This is the first year I won't be on the field, so that means I'll actually have good Wi-Fi to do during the game, which means I will be able to actually talk to people without having to constantly refresh and try to catch up to the 50,000 messages that have come through on the Slack by the time that the internet on the Coliseum floor catches up. So should be fun. Should be good.
Yep. Join us today at patreon.com/reignoftroy. Also, be sure to leave us a review over on Apple Podcasts and help grow the show that way. We've got a new review, Alicia, from Moy Caro. 5 stars. It says, top-rated podcast personalities. Michael and Alicia, I have been a fan of your show for many years and am happily a Patreon listener as well. Your two personalities and commentaries blend just so well together, and you're both very knowledgeable in college football. I can't wait for USC football 2020. Fight on. By the way, we were all wrong about Justin Herbert.
No kidding.
I will eat tons of crow about Justin Herbert.
Oh my gosh,
sure.
I'm eating all the crow about Justin Herbert. And big ups to the Chargers for putting him in a position where he can go out there and thrive. And man, is that not a huge indictment of Oregon's offense over the last couple of years? Makes you wonder what Joe Moorhead can go in there and improve, because clearly the offense was the problem when you had Justin Herbert, and we're seeing what he can be in the NFL, and they certainly weren't getting that out of him at the college level. Jesus.
Yeah, absolutely. I've said it before. I thought he was a good, not great quarterback. Looks like he's going to be an absolute stud in the NFL, because he already is. So more power to him. More power to the Chargers. We'll see what happens. I know this town is fervent with their Charger support. This is the Chargers town sure. And surely Justin Herbert will see that true. But that's going to wrap up this little intro. Let's get to the news, shall we? Here we have to discuss the Muneer McClain saga, if you want to call it that. USC has suspended wide receiver Muneer McClain, and it is an interesting sort of events, change of turn of whatever the hell you want to call this.
That about sums up everything about trying to make sense of this. It's just like it's a tongue twister in a weird, brain twisting kind of way. Do you want me to just get into it and try to explain to the folks what's going on?
I am definitely not the person to explain it.
Okay, so I will do my best to explain this as clearly and succinctly as possible. Really, if you want to know anything about this situation, really go read Ryan Karchi's stuff in the LA Times, because he's done a really good job of sussing out everything that's going on with this as much as it can be sussed, if that's a turn of phrase that is correct. So basically what happened is camp started and Clay Helton announced that Muneer McClain was suspended and that it was an indefinite suspension and that they weren't going to divulge the details of the why. Since then, the why has come out more or less, sort of, but thanks to Ryan Karchi, he reported for the LA Times that Muneer McClain is under investigation by the feds over his application for unemployment benefits. And he applied for unemployment benefits under the sort of pandemic unemployment assistance that got put out there when the coronavirus pandemic hit. Basically, he wouldn't have qualified for unemployment except under the pandemic assistance, which loosened some of the rules and made it possible for more people to get unemployment as a result. So he applied based on the business that he was doing, which was reselling shoes. So he's reselling shoes, and the business essentially dries up, he says, because of the pandemic. And so he applies for the pandemic assistance, the unemployment through that. And he receives the unemployment as a result. So that happens. From what we can tell, that is not an NCAA issue. The NCAA even told Karchi in the LA Times that NCAA rules don't cover unemployment benefits. So it would not seem that this is an NCAA issue, just right off the bat. The trouble is that the feds are now investigating his application. And we don't really have a good idea of why that is, what it is about his application that stirred their interest. What we do know is that USC was basically informed of concern that the federal agencies had about USC students and this unemployment benefit that was being received, and that Muneer McClain was involved. So in the course of all of this happening, USC suspended McLean, and federal agents have now been to USC's campus and spoken to several USC players, including Abdul-Malik McLean, who is Munir McLean's brother. And from what we know now, some USC players have received subpoenas with regard to this matter. What does any of that mean? It is incredibly hard to say because we don't know what it is that is even being investigated. Is it some sort of fraud that they're saying? Are they trying to say that maybe Munir McLean misrepresented his business or misrepresented his qualifications for unemployment? Were there other people involved? All of these things are at play here, which is what's making it all so hard to nail down. The latest developments from this were over the weekend, Munir McLean, his brother, Abdul-Malik, and his mother, and a civil rights leader from LA, held a press conference over the weekend to protest USC's decision to suspend Munir without giving them more of an indication of what it is that he did wrong, and without sort of, you know, to use a term that doesn't really apply here, without sort of due process as far as figuring out why it is that he's being kept from playing football at this point. The wording that was used for the press release on that one was on Saturday was a little bit strange. It was a little bit odd, a little bit misguided, I think. And it talked about defying Clay Helton over this. And there was a lot made of Clay Helton's salary and the differences between the players who aren't being paid and the coach that is. And a lot of that sort of drummed up, I think, some drama that didn't need to be there. But the press conference on Sunday was pretty straightforward. They just want Munir McLean to be unsuspended and they want him to be able to play. And Munir, obviously, Abdul-Malik, they were at the press conference. Tyler Vons was also there. Several other USC players were there supporting their teammate. But they were told, the players have been told by Clay Helton, by the university, to not speak publicly on the matter. And it sort of makes sense why. It's a federal investigation, and generally any lawyers for anybody will tell you just don't say a word because it can only end poorly for you. So that is the whole picture that we have right now, and it doesn't really explain a ton except for the very basic, very simple. If you are under investigation by a federal agency, USC will suspend you. That's seems to be what the crux of this whole thing is. Is that fair to Munir McLean? I mean, on the surface, if all it is they're doing, here's my opinion getting thrown in here. If all it is that they're doing is investigating whether or not he should have received pandemic unemployment assistance as an individual, seems like a little bit of overkill from USC. It doesn't seem like the kind of thing that requires an indefinite suspension. It feels like the kind of thing to me that maybe you just let it all play out, and then if he gets in trouble, then you deal with it later when it's resolved, especially because the NCAA has basically said this isn't our purview. What worries me here is that if this isn't a case of USC absolutely overreacting to something, which is possible it is, it definitely seems like overkill going the other way for federal agents to be knocking on doors because one person got unemployment assistance that they shouldn't have. So if I'm USC, I am definitely worried about the scope of this thing because it seems like a lot for one person to have triggered this kind of thing.
Yeah, this whole thing hurts my brain in a lot of ways because, yeah. Like, I don't know that I'm qualified to speak about any of this.
Oh, absolutely. And, like, I don't feel qualified at all.
And, like,
I don't understand unemployment assistance, and I don't understand how you qualify it for it or anything like that.
No, and if it's not an NCAA violation, then okay, and more power to him to be able to get, you know, any unemployment, just like any person, not like just a football player, but anyone. More power to him. As far as I'm concerned, whatever, right? At the same point, like you said, it does seem like absolute overkill for there to be all these subpoenas and everything just based on what we know. So this is one of those situations where you just have to wait and see what comes of it. Because it's... Yeah, I got nothing. And it's one of those situations, too, where... And I put this in the Slack channel over the weekend. SC's offseason was too good, wasn't it? It was too positive. It was too optimistic in which you looked at it and everything went SC's way this offseason, with the exception of not playing until November, right? This is an offseason in which there's a lot of hype for Keaton Slovis. There's a lot of hype for this offense. There's a lot of praise going around for this team turning it around. We know that, you know, Elijah Vera Tucker is back. Talanoa Hufanga is back. Like, there's a lot of players that are still on this team that are super talented and can take this team to the next level. And it's a team that, throughout this offseason, has had every important game taken off their schedule. Suddenly, they're a playoff contender.
Playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs. You kidding me?
Yeah, because of the schedule that's been created, and everything has gone USC's way this offseason. And then all of a sudden, here we are, a couple of weeks until the season starts, and suddenly, this is the USC you know and love, a USC that's getting investigated by the FBI in some sense. And it's Muneer McClain in the sense, not USC as an entity. But again, this is the third time in the last couple of years that USC and FBI have been in the same sentence.
Which is not ideal. Not ideal at all.
No.
So, and that's where, you know, if I'm going to cut USC some slack here, it's if a player is being investigated by the FBI, that is a concern. That is a problem. Right. And that is probably something that USC wants to not have be floating around their university. The problem that USC has now is that, and this we do feel, I think, qualified to speak on. Now you're dealing with a team issue. Now you're dealing with a player who has been suspended, a player whose brother is also on the team, who's being investigated by, who's being talked to by the feds, and you know the brother and several other players are joining a press conference to protest a suspension publicly. You're getting into some drama that you certainly didn't need. Even if it all turns out to be nothing, you now have this weekend where, you know, a press release was put out there that included the words "in defiance of Clay Helton" and compared USC to a slave plantation. So, you know, that's certainly not the drama-free offseason that we thought we were sort of heading through. And the hope for USC is that they're able to communicate better, to communicate between the players and the staff and the players' parents and all of that kind of stuff, and put this all to bed as far as it can be put to bed. But that would be my major concern, aside from obviously my concern being, you know, I don't want the FBI anywhere near anything going on with USC. My concern at this point from the football team perspective would be, how does this impact USC's preparation? How does this impact the team chemistry? How does this impact the just general serenity that is flowing through or around this program? We'll see, obviously, how they handle it.
Let's get into some other camp updates. USC, of course, has been in fall camp for the last few weeks. The media is not allowed to view camp because campus is shut down. This means that any conclusion about fall camp, purely speculative or parroted from USC themselves, right? We only have access through what Clay Helton says and what the coaches say and what the players say. So take that all with a grain of salt, with the exception of some hardened news here, like Trevor Trout out for the season. Someone that we've expected to see get a chance at some point. And it seems like every year there's been some sort of little injury bug.
Yeah, it's a bummer. He has dealt with a bicep tear, and he's dealt with a back injury, and apparently it's the back injury that that has given him the problem now that he's going to sit out. And the scariest part of all of this is that, you know, Clay Helton, you don't normally hear this from a head coach, but Clay Helton certainly implied that this could be a medical retirement situation. So that's a big bummer for a former four-star defensive tackle who was a big body USC could have used in the on the defensive line. But, you know, fortunately, USC has recruited that defensive line with some really intriguing bodies as well. And so maybe some of those guys are just going to have to get thrown in there a little bit earlier than we anticipated.
Yep. Other injury talk, particularly at linebacker, Jordan Iosefa, Elijah Winston, and Solomon Tuliapupu all out injured. Solomon Tuliapupu at this point, is he ever going to get on the field? Like, we've talked about it so many times. If only he could get on the field.
Is Solomon Tuliapupu the new George Farmer? Where it's like
we saw George Farmer.
Yeah, it's just, man, what bad luck. He comes in with this foot injury that keeps him out for 2 years. And then after he's fully healed from the foot injury, he busts his knee. Like, it sucks. It really sucks. What also sucks is the degree of injuries that USC has at linebacker. I mean, Jordan Iosefa is also a guy that was coming back from a knee injury, and then he has a setback, and all of a sudden he's not going to play this year. Elijah Winston is another guy who just had a freak injury this summer, and it's going to keep him out this year. And boom, three linebackers are out. And frankly, three linebackers that I thought could have all contended for potentially starting jobs. So that's a big collective blow for USC, and we found out on Monday that they've moved Raymond Scott from safety to linebacker to help deal with that. So, you know, the linebacker core is looking pretty thin at this point.
Yeah, but Raymond Scott, a two-time CIF state champ out of Narbonne, back over to linebacker, and it's wild because when you look at a season like SC is going to participate in which they play seven games over 6 weeks, literally anything can be a season-ending injury.
Yeah.
A broken finger can be a season-ending injury.
An ankle, you know? a high ankle sprain, you're done for pretty much the season.
Yeah, it could definitely be anything. The Trojans have been participating in fully padded, full contact practices. There's been reports that Brew McCoy is looking good, Drake Jackson is looking good, Keaton Slovis is up in weight and has improved his core strength. Players, I think it was Elijah Griffin, said that he's looking like a Heisman contender, an NFL quarterback out there. So lots of praise to go around. And this is really when it'd be great if we could see practice. And obviously, it's a pandemic. I think we all understand why not. But it'd be great to actually see where SC stands at this point, which is why one of the things that I'm looking forward to the season for is just to see exactly where SC is.
Yeah, you're right, because we're getting everything through the lens of what they're telling us. And normally during camp, spring or fall camp, what they're telling us is positive, and what we're seeing is generally positive, because it's hard to you know, there's not a lot to gauge it against. There's no score that you can put down to decide you know, whether or not it was a good day or a bad day necessarily. So camp reporting tends to be semi-positive, but when we're not even out there getting to see, okay, the offensive line looks okay or the defensive line looks okay, everything is being funneled through the coaches and the players, it's especially hard to tell what is real and what is not. The important thing on the Brew McCoy stuff is that he's healthy, and he was dealing with a little bit of a sort of tight hamstring. A lot of guys have been dealing with a little bit of sort of tight hamstrings and stuff like that. But that he's been able to go out there and practice is a big deal, because his availability is key for USC in that receiving core with not great depth there. But at the, you know, on the plus side, we are hearing a lot of things consistently about the practices being more physical. And Todd Orlando has definitely put out that aura of, he doesn't even see the value of practicing when you're not in pads. He was very much ready for the pads to come on. So that's a good sign. Those certainly good signs. But like you said, none of this really matters until you see how your preparation compared to Arizona State's preparation and whether or not it's going to propel you past them, which is really what matters.
Yes, indeed. Well, we got a bunch of questions, Alicia. Let's get to those. We'll be right back.
got mail.
All right, Alicia, let's start with a tweet we got from our pal Sean in beautiful Austin, Texas. We've seen the pitch to pass. We've seen the kick received misdirect. What will be USC's trick play of the season? You know, I love this question in a year in which nobody can go to practice because we can't spoil it this time. So a little inside baseball, when you go to practice, you're not supposed to, you know, talk about the schematics of what's going down, right? It's the same thing you see broadcasters talk to the players and the coaches in production meetings. They're getting all the inside scoops. They know when trick plays are coming and what could be run, so that way they can talk about these things. But you're not going to hear Joe Buck and Troy Aikman talking about, you know, a special trick play until it happens because of the sanctity of the game, right? So you've seen trick plays before, and
they're super fun, and you can't talk about
them. They're super fun. You cannot talk about them, right? And so here we are. We have not been to practice, so it's speculation season here. Wide open.
Yeah.
No worry of spoiling anything. It's great.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Like, I mean, could always throw a halfback pass somewhere in there. You could always throw a wide receiver pass somewhere in there. Tyler Vaughns has experience as a quarterback, so he's always
I was thinking that.
Yeah, always
we
somebody.
See him throw a pass against ASU.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we could see him do it again for sure. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, isn't that the fun of a trick play that you don't necessarily see it coming, that it kind of surprises you because you want it to surprise you and you want it to surprise the defense?
I got one. Relatively simple, flea flicker. I think we'll see a flea flicker.
Hope it's a well-executed flea flicker, because flea flickers are great unless they're bad.
Sure, but you get Gary Bryan out there, the speedster.
Mm.
Just let him burn somebody.
Let's do it.
You run a flea flicker with Marquis Stepp when everyone thinks it's a run play. There you go. Beat him over the top.
I'll take it.
Next question from Sean is, USC going to land Corey Foreman?
That is the big question, isn't it? I don't know. They
got to put together a good season.
They have to put together a good season if they want to. And even that wouldn't guarantee it. But I certainly think it would help if USC goes undefeated and looks really good and has some momentum going into the recruiting cycle, because, you know, I don't think you get him without it.
Yep. Slack message from Evan. What's more likely, Corey Foreman signs with USC or Jake Garcia signs with USC?
I think it's more likely that Jake Garcia signs with USC. And that is more a reflection of how uncertain I am about Corey Foreman than anything. Like, I just don't know what Corey Foreman's going to do. I don't know that Corey Foreman knows what Corey Foreman's going to do. So Jake Garcia is at least committed to USC, and it seems like that's not changing.
Yeah, that's half the battle is the commitment there. Obviously, Jake Garcia is up in the air. We know that SC has the commitment from Miller Moss. Jake Garcia is currently bandying about trying to get on the field somewhere at some place.
Somewhere in Georgia's going to let him play high school football.
If not Georgia, the state, it might be Georgia, the country.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the Garcias will try to do anything to get him on the field. I feel bad for Jake Garcia because he's had such a weird high school career, more so than Kenny Bigelow. Remember Kenny Bigelow and Khalil Rogers? They had that weird thing where they didn't play their senior seasons because their school got, like, banned.
Yeah.
And here we are, and Jake Garcia can, you know, do the whole hold my beer thing about his crazy tenure as a high school quarterback.
Yeah, it's going to be funny to look back on it in a couple of years and say, hey, remember Jake Garcia's, like, ridiculous odyssey at the high school level?
Can I just say,
most of which wasn't in his control?
No, and I just want to go on my soapbox. I've seen a lot of people criticizing Jake Garcia for so many transfers. I get it, but at the same point, you have to think about the situation he's been in. He goes from Long Beach Poly to Narbonne, and he becomes Narbonne's starter. He starts for 2 years. He would have started for 3 years if this would have been a normal year, And Narbonne wouldn't have gotten the penalties that they got from the CIF.
He only leaves Narbonne because of massive CIF penalties.
Yes.
Totally reasonable for him to go to Le Havre. It's not his fault that a global pandemic struck and canceled that season. And then he transfers to Valdosta. And really, where they went wrong there is that his parents talked to ESPN. Like, that was, like, I don't know that that was really in his control either. So Valdosta gets him.
Yeah, and at this point, you know, you're already committed to the bit by trying to play in Georgia, that you might as well just see what's up somewhere else. So yeah, ease up on the kid. If this isn't an indictment of his character or anything like that. And I've seen those comments in several places, and I really just don't get it. Evan also says, everyone keeps saying that the ASU game will be tougher than the Utah game. But why wouldn't the Utah game be tougher? I think ASU can be a good team this year, but wouldn't a game against Utah be tougher because it's on the road and Kyle Whittingham is more proven at the college level than Herm Edwards?
I think Evan is absolutely right on this. And I think that the hurdles that the ASU game brings are significant. The 9 a.m. start and all of that, knowing that ASU had more of a off-season than USC was able to do. But it's not like USC doesn't have that. And and also ASU had to replace its offensive and defensive coordinators, and ASU had to replace you know Benjamin and a couple other playmakers. So it's not like ASU is in perfect shape either. And I think that still traveling to Utah outweighs the 9 a.m. start to me. And it helps that Rice Eccles won't have a big crowd there. But at the same time, like, USC's problem hasn't necessarily been crowd noise. It's getting on a plane and traveling somewhere that's not the Coliseum that seems to be the problem. So that is still in play, if not more so, because you're getting on a plane in the middle of a pandemic and having all sorts of weird stuff, testing and all sorts of stuff that you're going to be doing. So yeah, I would still say that Utah is a harder game than ASU.
You know what it comes down to is quarterback bias and quarterback,
yes,
returning quarterback bias, right? Every time there is a team that has a quarterback that's returning, they will immediately get more hype than the same team that doesn't, right? And this is a situation where people look at Jaden Daniels and they completely forget that ASU does have to replace Eno Benjamin, Brandon Ayuk, both coordinators and whatnot, while Utah has to replace everybody too. So Utah's replacing a bunch of guys. ASU has more talent than Utah. I think that we can say definitively no matter what. But they're both replacing a lot of key parts. SC tends to play better at the Coliseum than on the road. So really, it's a coin flip, if anything. But both games could be tough. Both games can be tough. SC could lose each one of them. Should they? No, SC has a better roster and a better team, I would say, than both those teams. They should win both those games, but this is college football. This is college football in 2020, in the COVID year, in which, look at all the games going on. Look at the Big Ten. Anything can happen. Literally anything can happen this year. So at that point, who's to say what's tougher? It might be Washington State. You never know. A tweet from Oscar P. When is USC going to start signing five-star athletes?
I mean, have they necessarily stopped signing five-star athletes?
Well, not with the same consistency.
Well, certainly not, but it's, you know, they could sign Corey Foreman, so there's one. They got Brew McCoy. They've gotten, you know, they've gotten guys. I'm not trying to, like, give USC a pass. I just think that it's a really loaded question, considering USC has signed five stars and has five stars on their team. And what is the difference between, like, a five star? Like, Kyle Ford not being a five star was marginal, you know?
It's a weird issue, because we've talked, whenever we talk about the three stars, we said the problem isn't the three stars, it's that they're not having five stars in addition to the three stars. And here we are talking about the five stars, and it's an interesting situation where I don't necessarily think that the problem is the SC's not getting the five stars. It's that they aren't putting together classes that are comparable to what USC has done for the long term when you look at these last two classes.
Okay,
but again, I'm talking about two classes that have been signed after SC went 5-7 and then had to recruit on that season of 5-7. If SC wins games, they're going to get 5 stars. This is USC. It recruits itself to a point, no matter who the coach is, because we've seen Clay Helton get top 5 classes before.
Yeah, and that's kind of my point, is that it's USC does need to do better with recruiting those 5 stars, but you recruit those 5 stars better if you start winning games. So, you know, Corey Foreman and Justin Flo and, you know, those guys that USC has missed on in the past, those guys come to USC if USC is a national title contender. So, you know, that's the difference. For me, it's more important that USC has a class like this year where they have, you know, 8, 9, 10 guys who are in the top 200. Like, I don't necessarily need them all to be 5 stars, but when you've got, you know, that many high level 4 stars as USC has in this current class, I think you're doing fine.
Yeah, the only thing that I think is the real place to feel concern is on the offensive line.
Yeah, it's the linemen.
And SC's not recruiting 5-star offensive linemen there. One, because of logistics. There's not many 5-star offensive linemen on the West Coast.
Yes.
But number two is because they've kind of targeted a specific type of guy that they're looking for, and those guys don't tend to be 3-stars. And like we talked about over in our Patreon preview of the offensive line, that is a big gamble that USC is taking. It's one that could pay off, but it is a big gamble, right? The whole point of the star system is that stars matter, because it's not that 3 stars can't be superstars for your team. It's just that the 5 stars are more likely to pay out, right? It's all odds and probability. So if you're banking on an offensive line that's full of 3 stars, it's less likely that that line will succeed than one full of 5 stars. Doesn't mean it can't. It's just less likely. So you got to hit on that strategy. And if they do, great. If not, it's really going to backfire. That's just the situation. But the key to all of this is win games. You win games, you'll sign 5 stars, no matter the position. Maybe outside of the linemen, because there are no linemen in the West.
Well, and that's exactly what I was getting at. And if USC is able to recruit offensive linemen for the scheme and that works out, then 5 stars from other directions will end up coming to USC because they were able to do what they were able to do with the 3-star guys that they recruited. But it all comes down to development. It all comes down to what you do with them. So, you know, it's all stuff that we can't necessarily prove at this exact moment.
Anthony says, who are your breakout players this year on offense and defense?
Whew. Okay, so breakout player on...
On offense, I think it's only one person can qualify for this.
Brew McCoy?
I think it has to be Brew McCoy, right?
Because everyone else is... It would be like, could you put Stephen Carr as a breakout player if he has, like, a big final year? Maybe,
if he's the number one running back and rushes for 1,000 yards...
Or the equivalent of 1,000 yards.
Yeah, then maybe. But we've already seen what he is. And what his role is on this team, and barring a even if he's a superstar, like, we already know that he has that capability, yeah, too.
I'm gonna throw out, I think there are two potential true breakout options. It's Brew McCoy and it's Jude Wolf.
Okay, I would just say Brew McCoy or Gary Bryant.
Gary Bryant's another option for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
On defense, who you got?
It's tough on defense too, because there's a lot of known quantities. But I think I would be probably comfortable with going with Isaiah Pulumau, just because Talanoa Hufanga gets more of the attention. I think Isaiah Pulumau has a ton of talent. He has a year of being a starter under his belt, and I think this could be the year that he really takes it up a notch. Does he count as a breakout player if he's been a starter already?
It doesn't count for me. I think last year was his breakout year, especially okay. When you look at all the interceptions he had.
Well, then in that case, I'll just go with Raylan Goforth.
That's a good call. I was going to go with Max Williams.
Oh, I like it. I like it. Yeah.
We saw little flashes last year in the little time that he played. Him and Dorian Hewitt, I thought, looked good and just needed more time. and now they potentially get more time. And Williams being at that that nickel spot, I think, would be interesting to see what he can do this year. And Raylan Goforth at linebacker, where there's been all those injuries, certainly can play a big role for the Trojans. We got a question from RIP Kobe and Gigi. Who will make the biggest impact on both sides of the ball in general? Is it a scheme out just to say Keaton Slovis on offense?
Yeah, unless you want to go with Elijah Vera Tucker.
Sure.
Which I think is fair. If AVT is the thing that keeps Keaton Slovis upright and healthy, then that's certainly a big deal. And on defense, I mean, I got to go with Talanoa Hufanga just because he is the impact player on that defense. And I think Todd Orlando's scheme is really intriguing as far as what they'll have him be doing. So, yeah, that I think that he can be his best safety in a Todd Orlando scheme that we've seen other great safeties come out of.
1,000%. I would just say Hufanga. The only other guy I think I'll throw in there is Drake Jackson. Drake Jackson, yeah. Potentially, ideally, Hufanga's great, but Jackson's even better. That's the best.
That would be awesome.
Outcome for this defense. Yes. I would say. Yeah. Next question from RIP Kobe and Gigi. What team possesses the biggest threat to beating us this year in the Pac-12? I got a bold one. It's USC.
that's the answer, really. The problem is that Utah, we just don't know what they have at this point. ASU, Jaden Daniels is maybe the one that you look at and say he's a huge threat because USC didn't play him last year and he could be the game changer in a first game where USC's defense is still figuring itself out. He's probably the best opposing player USC will see this year that comes to mind, unless you get Oregon in the title game. So
and Penei Sewell comes out of the opt-out list.
Yeah. I mean, they got to, was it Diamador Lenore who opted back in?
And they clearly have a bunch of talent otherwise.
Yeah, Kayvon Thibodeau is pretty good for them, and
he's all right.
He's,
I think,
pretty decent.
He's pretty good. Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to say biggest threat. I mean, aside from Oregon in general, I think it's probably ASU. I do think just strictly from a talent level, like we talked about before, ASU and Utah both have question marks. I like ASU's roster a little bit more, not just because of Jaden Daniels either. Next question from Luke M. What position group makes the biggest improvement over last year?
I think it'll be the defensive line. No. It'll be the linebackers. It will absolutely 1,000% be the linebackers because they're starting from the lowest spot. They have the most to grow.
They have the most to grow in a system that should suit them in theory. Theoretically.
And this is the thing. And this is the thing that I think if you want to get really excited about this team, if you want to get really excited about the talk of this defense, then get really excited about the things that they're saying about Paulie and Ateote at this point. And not so much what they're saying about EA. Is what they're saying about Todd Orlando and his relationship with EA. Like, apparently...
Hot damn, that defense.
Apparently Orlando is really, really riding EA to be better than he was. He's really on, like, pushing him to maximize his ability. And if that's what he needs to be the player that we think he can be that All-American level player, then that could be the thing that just takes the defense to a whole other level. I was going to write something on Reign of Troy at some point this week about how Naoteote is the single most important player on the defense as far as if he has a good year, then USC's defense will have had a good year. And that is something that you can be very hopeful of.
Is he the biggest determining factor of how good SC could be?
I think so. I mean, aside from... you know, the offensive line as a whole. But if we're talking about single players, I think a big year for EA is a clear sign that something went right on that defense.
Right. Yeah, I would agree with you there for sure. Luke also says, which former four-star recruit that has never made an impact before and below will make a big impact this year? Raylan Goforth? Is it too soon to say Raylan Goforth in the sense of someone who's never made an impact? Well, he hasn't had a really opportunity to make an impact before.
Well, maybe it's your...
No, I got it.
It's your Max Williams call.
I got it. It's Liam Jimmons.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah.
Four-star recruits or below, and someone who's never made an impact before, Liam Jimmons, he made that transition to the offensive line from the defensive line.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, along with being buried on the depth chart, he's someone who's been around for years. Now he's looking like he's going to be a starting offensive lineman for SC. This is his opportunity.
Yeah, I think that's a decent answer. I think Max Williams potentially fits into that role. I don't know if I can predict it at this point, but if USC were able to get, you know, John Jackson III going as a receiver, maybe. Jude Wolf would fit into that, definitely.
All right, we've got so many more questions here in the mailbag coming up next. Tweet from Todd. How has Todd Orlando impacted the defense, and do you think the improvement, or lack thereof, will be significant?
I think there will be a significant improvement just because I think Todd Orlando is keyed in, where I think Clancy Pendergast really just clocked out early last year. And the one thing that I am really excited about is kind of what I was getting on earlier when I was talking about Ian Ateote. Orlando has brought a different kind of mindset to the defense. He seems to have been the driving force behind the physicality in practice. He seems to have that sort of edge to him that I think USC's defense lacked. And I think that is, you know, potentially a huge impact for the defense. Does that mean that USC is going to have a super elite defense? I wouldn't go that far. But I think they will be improved from last year. But then again, last year they really fell on their face at a certain point.
Next up, we got a Slack message from our pal Trent. After seeing what Kyler Murray did to the Seattle Seahawks on Sunday night, and this season in general, do you feel like Graham Harrell's offense can't be fully unlocked until USC has a mobile quarterback?
That is an interesting question.
I think the simplest answer is I think any offense is at its best if the quarterback is mobile. If you have a mobile quarterback that can give the defense just one more thing to think about and one more person to occupy a role on that defense, and if you have to go up against 10 men instead of 11 because that defense now suddenly has to account for the quarterback's ability to take off on his feet, I think that improves the offense. I don't think this is strictly a Graham Harrell thing or an air raid thing. I don't think it's that the air raid is better with a mobile quarterback. I think literally any offense is better with a mobile quarterback. And to be fair, I mean, look at what Alabama's doing. They're more obviously more physical than SC, but Mac Jones is not a mobile quarterback, especially compared to Tua, especially compared to Kyler Murray. So I think Alabama's offense is just fine without a mobile quarterback, but Alabama surely would be better if they had a mobile quarterback. I mean, more so that if Mac Jones was a more of a running quarterback, I think he'd be even better. And yes, obviously, mind you, that Alabama is more physical and therefore can get away with not having a mobile quarterback. Maybe unlike other schools.
Yeah, but, I mean, the problem here is that, like, Kyler Murray's legs, Lamar Jackson's legs, they're the kind of things that set them apart, but they're rare things. They're rare athletes. And most offenses aren't going to have that luxury. So, yes, do you want somebody who is mobile? Absolutely. Does that mean that you can't have your offense absolutely explode? No, I think you can have Graham Harrell's offense be amazing without a mobile quarterback. It helps not having a statue in the backfield, but it's not like Keaton Slovis is a statue. So I think that it's just another wrinkle that you'd like to be able to throw at opposing defenses. But as offensive coordinators will tell you all the time, that should be a cherry on top. That shouldn't be the primary thing that governs what your quarterback is doing. So if you're telling me, would I rather have Keaton Slovis, who also can, you know, run like Kyler Murray? Yeah, sure, I would love that, but I would also rather I would start with having Keaton Slovis. I mean, Matt Fink is a better runner than Keaton Slovis. That doesn't mean you want Matt Fink as your starting quarterback.
Right. I think decision making and the arm is more important than anything, but the running is that cherry on top. But to Trent's point, I think that if you look at how good your Kyler Murray's and your Deshaun Watson's can be, particularly in college, shouldn't you be recruiting those type of guys?
Well, who are those type of guys, though? Like,
I mean, Ohio State doesn't have a hard time replacing several of those dudes back to back to back to back to back.
Well, I guess my question is, should USC not be recruiting Miller Moss and Jake Garcia then? Because those are top 100 quarterbacks. Like, it's...
Right. Like, well, this is the other thing, that you look at California, what California produces. California produces a bunch of great pocket passers. And I think in general, if you have a great pocket passer, and I don't think that limits you. It's just that there's an extra tier that you can't get to in that sense of having a runner who's also an exceptional passer.
Yeah, I mean, you want the best of both worlds. I don't think that's anything crazy to be asking for, but you also have to go with what is the best of the world that you have.
Right.
And I think in USC's case, Keaton Slovis is that guy, and you hope that Miller Moss or Jake Garcia is that guy.
Yeah, the way I look at it, a mobile quarterback is going to take USC's potential offense from a 98 to 100. If SC's offense is as good as advertised and is as good as they can be, this is like a 98-level offense. If they are their best and if they play up to their potential, it's like a 98-rated offense. If you had the ability to make Keaton Slovis run a 4.340, then it's a 100-point offense. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
And I think that difference there is not enough to stop SC from winning games.
Yeah, and that's my whole point, is that, I mean, again, and it goes back to USC needs to start winning games, because USC had Bryce Young. USC could have had DJ Uiagalelei. I think I said his name right. USC could have had a couple of these guys that are those combo great passers and great runners. But they went to the, you know, national programs like Alabama and Clemson. Well, if USC puts themselves in that zone, then they will be able to have their pick of the litter there. But because they're not, they have to go with what is available, and what is available is guys like Miller Moss and Jake Garcia, who are perfectly capable of getting a ton out of the offense, you hope.
Yeah, especially for local guys. Let's go to a tweet from our pal Jay. This schedule is totally set up for SC to go undefeated. Can you fire Clay Helton if they have one or two losses? I feel like I'm going to say this every single episode. It's about the context. What do those one or two losses look like? Who are they against? What is the story behind them? If SC slogs through their schedule and I hate these what-if scenarios because they always sound corny, but if SC goes 5-1 through their first six games and there's a couple nail biters in there and they lose the Pac-12 championship game, then yes, you can fire Clay Helton. If they go 6-2 with a bowl game loss and a loss to Oregon in overtime, then you're probably not going to fire Clay Helton because they looked really good in that 6-2. Like, it's all about the context of what those one or two losses look like.
I think you're overthinking this. USC isn't firing Clay Helton with one or two losses under any circumstances. The finances aren't there. The pandemic hasn't helped. It's a weird season. He's going to get a pass this year. USC is not firing Clay Helton. Certainly not with one or two losses, in my opinion.
I actually think this is a case of optimistic, Alicia.
There was a report a little while ago, I think it was from ESPN, where they said, you know, basically it would need to be an utter disaster. I would tend to agree. I think USC needs to be like, what, there's seven games, like 2-5, 3-4.
We've talked about it before. If you don't fire him this year, you got to extend him.
Well, I don't think you do. Though, Okay, if it's a choice between extending him and firing him, you fire him, absolutely. But I don't think you have to extend him. You're in the middle of a pandemic. You don't extend him unless it's beneficial to you.
So you play the pandemic card for when SC is going after to recruit some, you know, we talk about these five-star guys that SC needs
if
to be
USC
going after.
If USC has
right?
gone 3-4 and is sure. contemplating firing Clay Helton, they're not getting the five-star guys anyways.
Okay, fair, but fine. But I'm saying
if USC is having to have this debate, then the extension should only come on USC's terms. That means the extension involves more years, but a more palatable buyout situation, which is not what USC got last
yes,
time.
Yes, I agree. In a bubble,
but
absolutely.
But I don't think you have to extend him after this year. I don't know
how you bring back a coach that only has 3 years on his. Nobody in college football does that.
It's a pandemic.
It does not happen.
Well, no one has ever had to deal with a pandemic.
So you use the pandemic.
I use the pandemic as an excuse or whatever. But I certainly.
So what
don't
do you what do you
him.
Say to that recruit that is being told by you know, insert or being told by. Kyle Whittingham, well, you know, Clay Helton only has a couple of more years on his schedule, on his contract. They didn't extend him. I don't know. I mean,
well, but Kyle Whittingham or
I mean,
whoever.
Tennessee
could...
extended, you know, Jeremy Pruitt. Cal extended Justin Wilcox, and they haven't achieved what Clay Helton has. And, you know,
no,
what does that
no,
say?
But the negative recruiting is going to happen whether USC extends him or not. They could sit there and say, well, you know, they can fire him at any moment. It's not like you are guaranteed to have him be your head coach for the next 4 years, which is factual.
Right.
If that's the story that other opposing teams are telling the recruits that USC has, USC can just turn around and say, listen, everybody's athletic departments are dealing with some issues. It wasn't the right time for us. We're in the middle of negotiations. It's not a big deal. Like, it doesn't have to be a big deal. Certainly not under these circumstances.
Realistically speaking, I agree. I'm saying it doesn't happen in college football then.
Well, but like I said, if USC extends Clay Helton, then
college football is ridiculous.
But if,
you know
if
what I mean?
But if USC extends Helton, then they should do so under their terms, which is to say, we'll give you more years, but you're not having any buyout situation going on here. And that's that.
Again.
So if you need to extend him, you extend him. Fine. But you certainly aren't firing him after this year. I guarantee you that.
Again, I agree that should be the premise. But when he's got Jimmy Sexton as an agent.
Yeah, I don't deal with Jimmy Sexton.
The reality of that situation.
No, if you're USC, you say, okay, fine, walk. And then your entire problem is solved. If I'm Mike Bone and Brandon Sosna and all of them, and I'm sitting there at the table with Jimmy Sexton, knowing that Jimmy Sexton put USC over a rake last time. Like, I sit there and say, "You want an extension? Okay, you're doing so, and this is the buyout that we're gonna have situated. You don't like that? Then leave."
I mean, I don't disagree that that's what you'd want to do, for sure. I hear you.
I'm just saying that.
That stuff doesn't happen in college football. Not to say that it couldn't or shouldn't, but it just doesn't happen.
I think you are still reacting from the gun-shy USC can't manage itself phase of the last few years.
It's not just about SC. Literally every team.
No, I'm. But again,
extends their coach.
Like I'm saying, it's not about extending or not extending. It's about if you're going to extend him, what does that extension look like? You can extend him without having it be a situation where you can't fire him the next year.
Sure,
you can extend Clay Helton in spring of 2021 and still fire him at the end of 2021.
Ideally,
if you do it right.
That's the situation. Yes, where you just tack on
so whether or not more years,
but not more money.
So
sure.
Whether or not you're extending him doesn't change the fact that you're not going to fire him after this year. You're just
I
not.
I still think they could.
I don't think they will.
I think they could.
I think you're living in a dreamland.
We will see when we get there, won't we? Let's go to a Slack message from L.A. Fred. Which coaches around the country should be watching as potential future USC head coaches? Dave Aranda, Venables, Fleck, Franklin, etc. If it's not Urban or another not current coach employed as a head coach.
Okay, I just wrote about this for fansided.com, so I can say with certainty, thank God, I don't think there's any chance that USC's getting James Franklin, which is them dodging a major bullet, in my opinion. J- James Franklin just signed a 6-year extension with a buyout of $38.5 million for this year. And it's not going to get that much lighter any year to year. He's guaranteed minimum $5 million. I think it's guaranteed $5 million, and then it adds up every year. Guaranteed that money.
Coach Helton for this?
Plus a $1 million life insurance thing that's I still don't understand.
Wow.
And all of that through the length of his contract. So, like, next year it'll still be 30-some-odd million. Like, no one's paying that buyout.
Yeah.
And Penn State's not paying that buyout to get rid of James Franklin, and no one's paying that buyout to bring James Franklin to them. It's just James Franklin ain't happening. I think Dave Aranda's the one you got to watch, because Dave Aranda has ties to the local area. There were rumors that he was considering coming to USC as a DC in the first place. And, you know, if he's able to do some good things with Baylor, then he's definitely somebody that I think USC should have their eye on. Brett Venables, you know what? It's just going to come down to when he decides he wants to be a head coach. And I don't know if USC would be the location that he would choose to make that leap. But
yeah, I think if you're Brent Venables, aren't you hoping that Nick Saban retires and that Dabo goes there?
Yeah,
and
I think
you just inherit.
You take over Clemson, yeah. Or some situation like that. I think PJ Fleck, that one's hard to gauge. The one I would throw out there that Elifred didn't mention is Luke Fickell, who is Cincinnati's head coach, who obviously Mike Bone knows very well, and who is got the Bearcats going pretty well over the last couple of years.
Yeah, they look really good on Saturday with the big drubbing of SMU, one that just completely blew up in the fourth quarter. Yeah, Fickell's someone that you can keep an eye on. Again, I always talk about Matt Campbell. He beat Oklahoma this year. Definitely someone who could potentially be much better at a school with more talent than Iowa State.
The problem with Matt Campbell is that his name is just going to keep coming up for NFL stuff. So that I just don't know.
I can't see him in the NFL.
I can't see it either, but it just feels like that'll be the step he takes the same step as the guy who went to the Panthers, whose name I'm blanking on right now.
Yeah, I would say that Fickell seems like the guy, right? Just because of the connection to Mike Bone.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's a lazy connection or not. It feels like it is. I don't know that, like, I don't know that Fickell's the guy just because he's got a connection to Mike Bone. You know what I mean?
But you're right that it feels like he does because he does.
Yeah, like, I don't know. Anyways, yeah. Let's wrap this thing up with a question from Michael Mudo. Does Michael's terrible food takes make it difficult to podcast with him, Alicia?
You know what? It makes it difficult to have any conversations with him because I'm always sitting on the edge of, is this going to be a bad take? Like, and then when he says he does like something, there's always a moment of like, wait, really? Like, are you pulling my leg? Like,
which I hate because, you know, I like most things.
I don't think you do.
I do. Yeah.
I don't know that you do.
For sure.
I don't know.
I like most things. There just happens to be a lot of trash products out there.
No, the biggest problem with Michael's terrible food takes is not that you guys have to listen to them. It's that I have to like dance around them when we go out like to get food or something like that. Like, you know, things have to be within the spectrum of Michael's weird deterministic, like this is good, but this is bad equation, and it's very hard to navigate sometimes.
I'm sorry, but if you want me to go to a burger place that puts freaking peanut butter on their burger buns, then that's a them problem, not a me problem. That's all I'm saying. And first of all, we're talking about Halloween candy. Halloween, first of all, trash holiday. You guys already know that part.
See, this is already the worst take he has.
But here's my thing. Most candy, not good. I'm not a sweets guy. I'm not a candy person. I like desserts. I don't like candies. Does that make sense?
I like all of the above.
Give me a piece of cake. Give me some cookies. Give me a brownie. Don't give me some Jolly Ranchers. And Jolly Ranchers I like compared to most things. But like, I look at these definitive, like, these are the best ever Halloween candies. Like Snickers, garbage. Twix, garbage. Reese's peanut butter cups, absolute trash. Anything with peanut butter is complete trash. Anything with nuts in it, complete garbage, which I know you agree with. You know, everyone yelling at their car, on their jog, listening to us talk right now, is mad at me because I don't like peanuts in my candy bars. But Alicia, tell the people. Tell them.
But the difference here is that I don't prefer nuts in my candy bars.
You don't like nuts in your candy bars.
No,
tell them.
I will eat a Snickers.
Tell the people.
It's just not my favorite. I'd rather have a Milky Way.
You don't like nuts in your candy bars.
I will eat a Reese's piece, Reese's thing. But I think of all the candies, for me, Reese's are overrated. They're the last thing I would reach for.
It's not but just the me.
Hold on. The difference is, while I would reach for other candies first, if it's a bowl of Reese's Pieces, I will eat the Reese's Pieces because candy is candy and I enjoy it.
And first of all, let me get to my strongest opinion. Anyone who says Reese's, please unsubscribe from the podcast right now.
That's turning away our listeners. This is lovely.
But check us out over on Patreon, patreon.com/reignoftroy. When we're talking about great Halloween candy, as a kid, I used to love Smarties.
I like Smarties.
I used to love the Smart Tarts.
Mm.
I like the ones, they're Smarties, right? The ones in the long tube.
The long tube, the long clear tube, yep.
Yeah, so I used to tell, like, my mom, I'm like, oh, I got some more of my medicine. And I'd pretend like they were, like, pills and stuff.
That's what we used to do with Pez.
Yeah, that could work, too.
Yeah.
So I used to love those. Love Tootsie Rolls. Love Tootsie Rolls. But no, if we're talking about candy bars, the best candy bars, you got... Let's not overthink it. Chocolate. Just a freaking chocolate bar is always going to be the best. Like a Dove milk chocolate bar? Let's not overthink it and add crap into a freaking candy bar. Just give me a piece of Dove milk chocolate.
Let's not overthink it and put down any candy. It's all wonderful and it should all be praised and given its fair due. Sometimes I want a Hershey's bar. Sometimes
but if it's
I
got
want a Milky
nuts
Way.
Or peanut butter or
sometimes
caramel,
I want other things.
Stick it.
Nah. Sometimes I want a Three Musketeers.
Three Musketeers does not have nuts, caramel,
This is why my argument for why 100 Grands are the best candy bar, because they have the chocolate, the caramel, and they have the crunch, but not via a nut, but via the crunch, like crunch Rice Krispies, like crunch.
See, those are the only types of, the only things I like in my chocolate are rice. So we're talking about
like
crunch
Rice
bars.
Krispies. Yeah.
Yes, a crackle. Or that little wafer that's in a Kit Kat.
Yeah, I love Kit Kats.
And by the way, the people who eat Kit Kats by breaking each one apart, stop being a heathen. Just eat the damn thing like a candy bar.
Eat it as it was meant to be eaten.
Like a candy bar.
Which is in an individual cut. It's made so that you have that individual.
Yeah, and then you have the chocolate melting all over your hands like a freaking weirdo.
No, that's good. It's tasty. Lick your finger. It's yummy.
M&M's great.
M&M's are good.
People who get peanut M&M's.
Yeah, but you had some Skittles slander up in here on Twitter a couple nights ago.
Because
and like,
Skittles are bad.
How?
You know what Skittles taste like?
Skittles are wonderful.
Skittles taste like if you got a piece of wadded up paper, you dipped it in some flat Sprite. And then you covered it in a colored coating and you
Who
ate it.
Are
That's
you?
What a Skittle is.
Who are you and what kind of experiments did they do on your taste buds when you were a child? Jeez.
I have a super taster palate.
No.
I'm the one that you should be praising here for my taste.
No, no.
Utter garbage.
I do not endorse any
Complete
of his
trash.
Declarations of things being garbage. I find very few things to be garbage, except for garbage. Like
Starburst, great.
I love
Starburst.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love Starburst. I love Skittles. I love Twizzlers. I love Twix. I love Kit Kats. I love Hershey's bars. I love Milky Ways, Three Musketeers, 100 Grands, Hershey's Kisses, Tootsie Rolls, Smarties, Necco Wafers, Charleston Chews.
Where are you on Dots?
I like Dots. The only candy that I genuinely don't like is candy corn.
And the way I look at candy corn is fine in small doses.
I'm not a huge, like, I like jelly beans, but I also go back and forth on jelly beans.
Jelly beans are something that I think that are, I put in the candy corn realm. They are good if I have three of them in my hand. If I have three candy corns in my hand, I can be like, that was good, and I'll move on about my day. If I have a handful, when I get to the end, I'm like, why did I eat the last half of these? It's just
too much. I have no self-control. So
and I say this as someone who loves the buttered popcorn jelly bellies. Those are the best kind of jelly bellies.
No.
Yeah, buttered popcorn.
No.
Yeah.
No.
What kind of jelly bellies do you get?
All of them except for that one. I like the ones that are fruity flavored. I like the ones that are like soda flavored.
Buttered popcorn is the best one by far.
No.
Yes.
I do not like at all. I have the taste in my mouth right now, and it's the most disappointing thing when you're like eating and you get all the wonderful fruity flavors and all sorts of things, and then you pop that one in your mouth, and then you're just like that is a change of direction that I don't appreciate.
It's the best one.
It's like when you get the Bertie Bott's every flavor beans, and like that's meant to be one of the good flavors, but it's actually one of the bad flavors for me. No. Can't do it. Don't like.
What am I going to do here? Pass. Folks? What am I going to do?
What are you going to do? Jeez. Yeah,
what am I going to do? Anyways, I know what you guys are going to do. You guys are going to head over to Patreon and join us over there. We've got a bunch of bonus content, including our 10-part series talking about all things USC, unit by unit. We've done the offense. We're now hitting into the defense, so go check that out. Patreon.com/RenFTroy. Get all of our bonus content for as little as $5.55 per month. For $10, you get to join our Slack channel and talk with us about USC football, especially on game days when it's going to be an absolute blast. Alicia, got any final words?
The final word is Halloween, as in Happy Halloween, everybody. Don't let Michael being a Grinch get you down.
I'm not a Grinch.
You're a Grinch.
Oh, can I get on my soapbox one more time?
We are entering a critical moment of the year when I really hate you because you crap all over Halloween and then you crap all over Thanksgiving, and I am deeply offended by both things.
Okay, these are the kind of people I really cannot stand. The people who have to decorate their house for Halloween on September 23rd or whatever it is, and then they have to start, you know, I can't wait until Christmas season.
Yeah, because they
October
love happy
everyone,
times that people like enjoy, because
Halloween and
holidays
Christmas decorations
are good.
Don't need to be up that long. Like,
well, I'm too lazy, so that's why I don't put them up that
Christmas
early. But
music,
I would.
Don't start listening to your freaking Christmas
music. Okay, that's
music
fair.
Until it's December.
You shouldn't start listening to Christmas music until after the Black Friday is the first day you should listen.
I
to
mean,
Christmas
realistically,
music.
I think the people who are all invested as adults in like Halloween month and Christmas month, like they can't find happiness in anything else. That they have to find happiness in those two fabricated Hallmark holidays.
This is why people like me better than you, Michael. Because
no,
you are
not
a Grinch.
I'm not a Grinch.
You're a Grinch. Why can't holidays just be happy times that people enjoy? Because they're exciting and they're different and
it's
they're
all manufactured.
There's flavor there.
Hallmark wants you to.
What? Hallmark is fine.
Big greeting card.
Big
wants
greeting card is controlling our brains. Yeah,
exactly. Big greeting card and
I don't
big lights.
I don't buy greeting cards, so big greeting card isn't working. But big lights definitely is making out here. So big dollar store where I buy all the cheap Halloween decorations has definitely gotten some of my dollars.
All right, we'll see you guys next time. See ya.
See ya.